today, here, too, because it is certainly applicable in terms of the reading. I ask people to close their eyes when I write a word on the board. And I said, when you open your eyes and you see the word, see what first comes into your mind. The word is S-U-C-C-E-S-S. And everybody comes to the same conclusion. You made lots of money. I think it's very revelatory about that human being, that that is the measure of the success, not just of life, but our humanity, the whole human endeavor. And as I read readings, or as one writer called them, texts of terror, money. Why is it never enough? When is enough? When is enough? More importantly, why this insatiable appetite for the acquisition of money and property? I think it was Adam Smith who first made the proposition that it is simply a function of the most fundamental human impulse, which is that of self-preservation, of survival. I think it's a really telling insight. There's nothing more basic than that for us human beings, sure. We have to survive. And the thing that will guarantee and abet that survival is the acquisition of money and goods and all that goes with them. And so it is not surprising, I think, that not only the Jews or Jesus, the Jew, but every major religious tradition I know puts what would seem to be inordinate emphasis on poverty. So far as I know, they all do. The Buddhists do, the Hindus do. And I think this has been, virtually from the 3rd century, one of the major crises, an ongoing crisis to this day, in the Christian movement, especially in the Roman Church. Maybe because we've been around longer, maybe because that collision, one would call it a collision, or some would call it assimilation, of the Jesus movement to imperial power and imperial structures occurred. And we've never really acknowledged that or worked out the implications. Because clearly, in the imperial vision of things, to be real, to be powerful, was to be wealthy. Find this, of course, manifest in all the symbols of Catholicism. Amethyst ring for bishops, eh? A little discreet gold chain, or a nice black heel, or over a bishop's shirt. People running around in extraordinarily expensive clothes. Pope's caskets cost over $5,000 a piece, in case anybody's interested. Our symbols are all terribly awry. And because that, so it is very difficult to even begin to grapple with this most difficult thing, the question of poverty. Because we belie it over and over and over again. And I put it to you, is this true or is this some kind of project weird excessiveness again? Is that the case? It certainly is in my experience. I've been spending a lot of time looking at things African, and it occurred to me that the Society of the Missionaries of Africa, so-called White Fathers, they live better than anybody else. Well, the Jesuits may be a little better in the Sahara, live better than anybody else. There was one Swiss group of priests called the Bethlehemite Fathers who were very strange in that they lived in the shanty compound, in the shanty. They were there by way of massive exception. What's the problem? What fundamentally is the problem? That the impulse to survival, the impulse to self-preservation is always egocentric. I am the center of that entire thing. That being the case, our relations with others, if they exist at all, have a highly tentative quality, I think. Most scholars believe that this passage from Mark, where Peter is saying, we've done all that, now what's in it for us? Yeah, good old Peter. He's got that wonderful into what this is all about. And Jesus' answer, according to the scholars, is that if you have done that, then you will get a hundredfold. The hundredfold means not the biggest stock portfolio on the block, but the fact that you really will live in a community with other people. It's precisely that the whole impulse of the gospel and the Jesus life is it will be just breaking open. Transcendence of the passion for self-revelation, the breaking open of the self to the other. It's worthwhile, I think, reflecting on why we live more lavishly than did the sun's game, really, if you look at all the furniture of our life. I do. And it's very difficult to get beyond that simply because all those things which have crosses on them, the crosses are usually made of gold. Which is, you know, a contradiction in terms. It always threw me, even before I thought about this very much, it's very strange that people walk around with real gold crucifix around them. Gold does not tarnish, I realize that. You get brass and then your chest turns green and all that. I run it and understand all that. But the symbolism, and it's more than symbolism, our understanding of that is massively warped. So poverty is not some kind of luxury. And it's not just that you give away stuff because those poor buggers over there don't have anything. No, that's not the reason you're supposed to give all this stuff away. It is to disencumber oneself from one's own massive egocentricness. That's the issue. And at least in my experience, I just don't see this. I mean, I'm terrified by these texts, and I don't see them realized very many places in the church. The Franciscans, for simple example, Francis married Lady Poverty. Within a generation after his death, instead of coming out in these shaggy-looking, goodwill cast-off brown tunics, they were all tailored, neat. Franciscan habits are today. They're elegant. They're so wonderful. There's even cattle. You can order one for yourself because they think they are so elegant. In other words, this points to what? The difficulty of sustaining that impulse, of sustaining that understanding of what success is. The difficulty, which is a fundamental difficulty, of course, of self-transcendence, of opening ourselves to the God who is greater than I and who upholds my life. And as the gospel says in another parable, all the acquisitions in the world are quite irrelevant to the human impulse. So where are we left with? I think, and this is dangerous territory. I mean, we have this mindless accusation of Catholicism as the great breeder of guilt. I always thought the Jews were better at that than we were. But I really think that we deserve to have guilty conscience. I believe there is a healthy kind of guilt which keeps us questioning about who we are, about what we're doing, about why we're doing it. And I think without that kind of guilt, we are static. We are dead in the water. We are not going to be there. Because it's that guilt that generates all the questions. Project, who are you being? What do you mean anymore? This will move me closer, I think, to a greater ardor in the search for God and a search for the person I'm really supposed to be.